Hi, I'm Pete from Cleveland, Ohio. The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me. If you'd like to donate to support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org.
Radio sweetheart, on the airways, it's the sound of young America.
On this Sound of Young America, indie film mogul Lloyd Kaufman. Lloyd Kaufman's signature creation, The Toxic Avenger, has just opened on Broadway. Here's the triumphant track, A Brand New Day in New Jersey, from the soundtrack.
Global warming's up ahead. The experts think we'll all be dead, but they don't know we're here to fight. Corporations are full of fear.
Lloyd Kaufman, welcome to The Sound of Young America. It's great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. The Today Show missed out. And it was a choice between you and Leno, and I took The Sound of Young America clapping.
Well, I appreciate
the one-hand sound.
I appreciate
of young,
that.
Young
I mean,
American
I can,
one-handed people clapping.
I can see how you wouldn't want to take a chance on Leno's new time slot.
Oh, everything. Absolutely.
Go no with way. The sure thing. That's what I always say.
Exactly. You're right.
And at the end of the day, what's the sure thing? The marginal public radio program.
The Sound of Young America. That's for me.
You got into film as a college student.
Yes, sir.
Was there a point that you decided that making movies was the thing you were going to do?
Indeed, there was. I have another book called All I Need to Know About Filmmaking I Learned from The Toxic Avenger, published by Penguin Putnam, one of those other devil-worshipping international conglomerates we love to hate. I went to Yale. It was the 60s. I was going to be a teacher or a social worker, teach people with hooks for hands how to finger paint, make the world a better place, teach bums how to paint happy faces on beads and string the beads together. But I got put in a room freshman year with a movie nut, the guy who ran the Yale Film Society. I started watching movies. I started going into the Yale Film Society. I was a Broadway musical guy. I wept through many a, being a gay married man, I wept through many a Barbra Streisand musical or Judy Garland or whatever. But I never heard of a film director. I never heard the word. I didn't know that Charlie Chaplin was a great filmmaker. I just thought he was a clown. John Ford, Howard Hawks, Mizoguchi, Jean Renoir, Fritz Lang. I kept going to these movies and getting blown away. Stan Brakhage, Andy Warhol. And finally, there was one evening at Yale, one night I was in the Film Society room watching Ernst Lubitsch's To Be or Not to Be. And I decided right then and there, because the Ernst Lubitsch masterpiece was so great, that I decided right then and there to give what I have to the movie-going public.
What was it about those cinematic masterpieces? I would take Ernst Lubitsch. What was it about Ernst Lubitsch specifically?
Ernst
so
Lubitsch,
inspiring?
Because he was crazy, and yet he was totally in control. He was wacky, emotional, heart-rending, extreme, much more To Be or Not to Be, or his movies were further out there than probably, you know, Saw Part 5 is today. But yet, totally controlled. And I majored in Chinese studies, and Taoism was what impressed me a lot. The yin and yang, and good and evil. Everything's wrapped up. You know, good and evil are together. You don't get one without the other. The great king leads by not leading. You know, that stuff. So the Lubitsch movie appealed to me a great deal.
You said something in an interview that I thought was very interesting, which was that you thought that when you first started making student films, when you were still at Yale, one of the things that distinguished you from your peers was that you were interested in making features at a time when students were really keen on making, you know, kind of trippy short films. You know,
trying
to capture psychedelia in the form of films, and you wanting to make features. Why was that?
I enjoy the narrative. I enjoy being entertained. I think that's probably the main purpose of a film is to strike you emotionally and entertain you. And I probably would have written a novel had I been born 10 years earlier, but by the 60s, I got into cinema.
Troma's made all different kinds of film, made and distributed every different kind of film, but you're best known for the sort of horror comedy, like Toxic Avenger, that was your... It remains your sort of signature piece, but your earliest films in Troma weren't in that genre. Were those kinds of things interesting to you at the time, or was that something you discovered along the way?
Well, Troma has a library of about 800 movies, movies that I didn't, most of which I had nothing to do with, but they did introduce many stars and
including something
people.
Called. I sent something out on the Twitter that you were coming over. Someone insisted that I ask you about something called Doggy Tales.
Doggy Tales, we made that. That was our children's movie that Michael Herz, my partner for 35 years, had a great idea. We make a children's movie. And, of course, my wife, who wants me to make movies without explosive diarrhea, jumped on. So we made this really horrible doggy movie. It's actually, little teeny kids love it. But because it came from Troma, you know, no store would take it. But if anybody has a two-year-old kid, three-year-old kid, Doggy Tales is great. It's the doggy is named Lucky, and Lucky has his first sleepover. He has to go to the dog sleepaway place, you know, the whatever it is, the daycare shelter for dogs. And he meets all the other doggies, and the children learn all the different types of doggies. And there's some songs, and the children can learn to read a little bit. Where there's a dog head, kind of a bouncing dog head that articulates the words in the songs. It's actually a pretty good little show. And the children who've seen it, the six children in the past 10 years who've bought the DVD, they love it. Also, what's interesting is that at a lot of the comic book and horror conventions, the stoners buy Doggy Tales, and they also love it. So Troma has the magic. We hit the nerve.
You have a breadth of product, but certainly you're most known for films that feature things like a head being run over by a car in Toxic Avenger.
Well, I think where Peter Jackson and James Gunn and Eli Roth and Takashi Miike and Gaspar Noé and a lot of the younger directors, at least young compared to me, thought or think that I'm sort of unique is that I'm a genre bender.
Yeah.
Also gender bender. But I'm a genre bender. With the early movies, Squeeze Play was about the women's liberation movement, but it combined sex and slapstick comedy, which was not done.
No.
The sex trade was supposed to encourage manufacturing raincoats, and it was supposed to be very serious. And we made Squeeze Play, which was...
The women's liberation movement being a notably earnest movement.
Well, Ernestine movement. And then we did Waitress, Stuck on You, which was Vincent D'Onofrio's first movie. There'd be no CSI without the first turn on. And we also turned down Madonna for the first turn on. But we did it before Porky's and those kinds of movies came out.
What was your process after you'd made a film at the end of the 1970s, beginning of the 1980s, when you were making films commercially? You were making films to
35
make money.
Millimeter. Well, not to make money. Never was it the intention to become rich through filmmaking. The intention was to do things that at least stirred
but
me emotionally.
My point being, you weren't making student films anymore. You were making films that you hoped would be sustainable financially.
Read some of the reviews.
When you made a movie like that and spent a fair bit of money on it, because there's no way to make a 35 millimeter film without spending a 35 millimeter feature film without spending a fair bit of money on
right.
it. What was the process? What was the distribution like? What did you have to do to get it to people?
Well, we had to learn the distribution business. We made a couple of movies and got ripped off for various reasons. So we decided that we better learn. Michael Herz and I decided we better start distributing right to the movie theaters. So with Squeeze Play, we just went to the movie theaters. We knocked on doors. And at that time, the theaters needed, if you had a movie that might please the public, the theaters wanted it because they didn't have enough movies. and they were not. There were lots of smaller theater organizations around the country that needed movies. There was something called, it's very unusual, this doesn't exist too much anymore, but there was something called competition. The Sesame Street never uses that word, of course. They should teach the children the word competition, because that serves the public better. That's why the internet is so cool, because it's a level playing field, and we must preserve net neutrality. That's a part of my direct your own damn movie book.
Were you literally physically, you know, were you traveling salesman style, going place to place? Were you on the phone?
No, we had we would. With Squeeze Play, 75, 76, somewhere around then, we got American Multi-Cinema, which was the pioneer in multi-screen complexes. And they agreed, finally, after lots of banging on doors, and they finally agreed to give Squeeze Play a sneak preview on a weekend in Norfolk, Virginia. And they previewed it with the In-Laws. And the audience went nuts. They loved it. So the next Monday, American Multi-Cinema said they'd book it anywhere we wanted. You know, we had like one print, but we ended up with, I think, 200 or 300 35-millimeter prints. Because Squeeze Play was a little ahead of the Borky's genre, we ended up doing very well with it. And we made a series of raunchy comedies that were social satires.
What happens when a suave young mattress worker meets a sweet Southern belle and takes her on a ride to love? What happens when the town's number one stud prepares for the biggest conquest of his career? What happens? Squeeze Play, the movie that everyone's calling the funniest film since Animal House and Meatball.
And then the majors started doing what we were doing, except they were playing unfair. They were using good actors and good scripts. So we had to move to somewhere else. So we decided, we saw a newspaper article, I think it was Variety or one of the trades, suggesting that horror films were no longer viable. So we said, okay, that's our Hitler. So we went for that, and we decided we would go into the horror genre, although Toxic Avenger is by no means a horror. It's a satire. It's a social satire, and Toxie is the superhero.
Well, certainly, like many horror films, they're social satires. Often.
Well, you don't get scared with Toxie.
Right.
Even the funny horror films you get scared at. Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead is not frightening. It may be disgusting. It has singing and dancing in it. There's no way you're going to get scared. You might be shocked, and you might be disgusted. You might be convulsed in laughter, but you will not be frightened by any film that I've ever made.
Well, when you decided to go into horror, did you have...
It's not horror. It's trauma.
Okay.
It's a different... Trauma is a thing all
okay,
to itself.
Okay, but when you read that newspaper article about
yes, sir,
horror being
yeah,
dead
yeah,
and
yeah,
decided to...
That.
Did you have experience or interest in horror films prior to that? Was this something that had always been in the back of your mind, or was this a new, or was this a totally new frontier?
I have to say, other than seeing a lot of movies, I knew nothing about the world of horror. You know, I love Frankenstein. That was a big, made a big impression on me. I always wanted Frankenstein to live. Ergo, that's one of the reasons the Toxic Avenger is a superhero. He's a good guy. He lit. You know, he's been
right.
Four movies, cartoon show. There's a musical in New York opening.
If I'm not mistaken, the Toxic Crusaders were gross, but they still got girls.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
When you decided to move in this direction, what did you have to learn about what people wanted to see? What did you?
I've never really. That's a good point. It's not that I care about what people want to see. I try to put something in the movie that somebody might buy a ticket for. If you have a monster in a movie, it doesn't matter what kind of movie it is. You know, it could be the Rosie O'Donnell story. You could, someone will buy a ticket if it's got a monster.
Because they want to see the monster. They want to see Rosie O'Donnell.
There are people that go to see every monster movie. There are people that will go to see, put a gun in a movie, somebody's going to show up. You know, if you're doing a movie about a raccoon, I don't know why Animal Planet doesn't have more raccoons holding guns. They'd have a much bigger ratings. You know, eroticism. Somebody's going to go see a movie that has a bit of eroticism.
Nudity, yeah. Boobs.
Well, I mean, need a little more than that these days. But the point is that you try to put something in the film that somebody might buy a ticket for, and then basically make it your own. Do something that totally consumes you. Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead was motivated by the fact that McDonald's moved in next door to the Troma building in New York, and we were infested with rats the size of raccoons, and they luckily didn't have guns. And I had to go down there and battle them, and in doing all that stuff, we got the idea, let's make a movie that's sort of anti-fast food, but also skewers the Al Gore and Tipper Gore $200 million limousine liberal types.
And also really takes the opportunity to take Indian chicken zombies to task.
Well, it's not... We're kind of agnostic about whether they're good or bad, but they're basically getting, the Indians were exterminated. Billions of chickens are tortured to death in order so we can have those McDonald chickenettes or whatever they're called. And the fast food establishment is built on the ancient cemetery of the Indians. So the spirits of the exterminated Indians meld with the spirits of the exterminated chickens, and poltergeist ensues.
You fool! This restaurant is built on ancient Tomahawk tribe sacred Indian burial grounds! Get out while you still can! Get out! Save yourselves! Save yourselves!
More with indie film mogul Lloyd Kaufman when we return in just a minute. Hey gang, it's Jesse. Our second annual Maximum Fun Drive runs May 1st through May 15th, 2009. Your donations are what keeps this show and all our shows and programs at MaximumFun.org running, and once a year we come to you hat in hand looking for your support. You can donate anything from $2 a month to $200 a month. There's amazing thank you gifts at every donation level, ranging from our Maximum Fun Club card to dinner with me, and it all goes to keep the lights on right here at MaximumFun.org. We're giving away copies of books, like Mark Adams' new Mr. America about the crazy diet guru Bernard McFadden, and Love Mom, a collection of crazy emails people have gotten from their moms. Plus comedy, like Irish comic Tommy Tiernan's latest CD or Louis C.K.'s new DVD, and music, like the new performance DVD from the band The Hold Steady. No matter what you're into, we've got a thank you gift for you, but only if you donate. And if that's not enough, we've got more than 40 existing donors, people who already give, who are standing by with an extra donation if you sign up. These folks already give us money, and they're challenging you to do the same. Just visit MaximumFun.org to get the lowdown on all our awesome prizes, and of course, to give. Do it now and make the world a better place. It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Lloyd Kaufman, founder of Troma Films. It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Lloyd Kaufman, the mad genius behind Troma Films like The Toxic Avenger and Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. His new book is called Make Your Own Damn Movie. How did the mechanics of being independent in film change in the 10 years or so between the mid-70s when you were making raunchy social satire and the mid-80s when you started... When you hit with Toxic Avenger?
Well, I think it's been a slow process, and it has accelerated in the last 10 years, that the rules that used to protect the public against monopoly have been done away with. One by one, they've been taken down, and therefore the playing field is much more against the independent. It is from almost being level. When I started, the playing field was still in favor of the big studios and the conglomerates, but it was maybe a 45-degree angle against us. Now it's literally perpendicular. It's like a greased stripper's pole, and it is very difficult for an independent company. Troma's 35 years old, and the only reason we're still around is we have kind of a brand name. We have a loyal following among younger 16 to 40-year-old, maybe. It tends to go a little older because we've been around so long, but they have to make the effort to find our movies. You know, we've never had a movie in Blockbuster, ever. Cannibal the Musical, which is Trey Parker and Matt Stone's first movie.
The creators of South Park.
Yes, sir, right. And that movie has never been on television, and it has no nudity. I mean, it's totally benign. It's got some Monty Python, and it was a huge hit on home video, like 200,000 units, I think. I mean, it was huge with no advertising, and it's one of our best movies. It's never been on TV. The fourth Citizen Toxie has never been on TV. The first Toxic Avenger... The fourth Toxic Avenger has never been on TV. The first one was everywhere, including syndication. It was on every possible cable system. Of course, there were a multitude of video chains and stores, but slowly and surely, or not so slowly and surely, it has been, it's down to 500 TV stations all showing, Hollywood Musical Part 3. That's what we got.
Have you been surprised in making all these films at what parts of films really connect with audiences? Because you're in the business of, as you said, having some element that really excites people enough to get them to take an extra step to find something and watch something. Have you been surprised ever at what that element is?
Every time I personally make a movie, I always assume it's going to be a sensation, that the public, that Roger Ebert's going to discover it, and Jesse from Young America is going to take me under his wing, and it's going to be a sensation. But it never happens. It never happens. For the most part, the media used to have interest in the independent, but because of all the consolidation and the fact that New York Times, they're all living off, they're all on the advertising needle. They got
You got a pretty great review in the New York Times.
Well, the problem with the New York Times is Poultry Geist, Night of the Chicken Dead got a very good review in the New York Times, but it was in the garbage column. After 40 years of filmmaking, all these directors being influenced by me, they put my movie in the garbage column. And they have a big review of High School Musical Part 3, but Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead is put in this column that's like, and there's also the crap that's coming out this weekend. We only give it one paragraph because it's trivial and meaningless. And if you're the consumer, do you look at that column? No, you're going to look at the column where they take it seriously. High School Musical, it was so interesting, and they had boots, and the New York Times, but that's what they do. The New York Times guy, read the review he did of Harold and Kumar in Guantanamo. Oh, the fart jokes, they're socially significant of American culture today, and this is such a wonderful, it goes on and on and on about the... Meanwhile, Poultrygeist, which is socially significant, and 20 years from now, Spielberg will be making Farmageddon, and it'll be about zombie cows 20 years from now, and it'll be full-page reviews of everything, and that's the problem. If the media doesn't tell the public that we independents exist, we don't exist. It's like Russia when they took your passport away. You didn't exist. You couldn't get work. But I'm not bitter. You to direct your own damn movie.
I was about to say you don't have to worry. I'll bring
you're
it back.
You're a nice guy. You're a very nice guy, Jesse.
Direct Your Own Damn Movie is your new book. There's all these people that have passed through trauma and been inspired by trauma. Yes, that long list that you were so kind to share with us.
Well, it goes on forever. No, seriously.
There's so many people who have been inspired by this.
Or who work for us.
Exactly.
Again, it's another reason why independent movie studios should at least have a slightly level playing field.
Sure. So
they train the new talent.
And you also teach. You teach master classes around the country, at film schools around the country, about basically independent filmmaking.
Yes.
And quite sincerely, literally independent
filmmaking.
Well,
I filmed, like the book will talk about how to raise money. And I have actually filmed a trauma investors audition, how to do telecine. I filmed the telecine session on... Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. I have both. The master class will give you an opportunity. And again, these are one shot. They could be 2 hours or maybe 2 days, but it's not like I teach professionally.
Do you feel like the people that you teach in these, because you're just doing this once in a while over a period of a long time. Do you feel like the perspectives have changed among young people who are trying to make films? Do you think that the people feel more optimistic about their ability to make film independently?
Well, it's yin and yang. It goes back to my Chinese studies at Yale. On the one hand, the industry has become totally closed. It's a cartel or an oligopoly. But for the first time in history, the filmmaking process has been democratized so that anyone can direct his or her or its own damn movie, thanks to the digital age. I mean, for the first time, you don't have to be rich to make a movie. When I made Battle of Love's Return, which, by the way, was Oliver Stone's first foray into slightly professional cinema, and he's actually an actor in the movie, that movie was cost $8,000 in 1969 or 1970, whenever. $8,000 then is probably $80 billion today, right, with inflation.
About, yeah.
About, yeah. So the
certainly
point is
80 billion euros.
Yeah, exactly. So the point is with a digital camera now, you can make a movie for zero. You you don't have to be in Los Angeles or New York. You can be a teacher. You can do something useful with your life. You don't have to walk the red carpet and wear a diamond ring or be the king. What is Sean Combs? He's the king on all those posters. Puffy,
I believe
Puff Daddy.
He am king. Yeah.
Exactly. He's got a gun. He likes guns. He knows how to make a raccoon movie. The point is, you don't have to do that in an age of depression and people losing their homes. You can be a school teacher. You can be a nurse. You can have a real life and still be an artist. Which is in the same way that a painter can be a painter without having to be Mr. Corzine, billionaire, and then buy your way into the governorship of New Jersey and then bankrupt it.
Well, Lloyd Kaufman, my guest, is the author of Direct Your Own Damn Movie, as well as its predecessor, Make Your Own Damn Movie, the director of many films, the most recent of which was Poultrygeist. He's also the big boss of Trauma Entertainment. Lloyd, thank you so much for being on The Sound of Young America. It was so great to have you.
Well, thank you, Jesse, and thanks for letting me be on The Sound of Young America. It's the highlight of my 40 years of making cinema. I finally made it.
That's what I like to hear. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music written and performed by Dan Grayson with help from myself. Interstitial music provided by Dan Wally. The show is edited by Nick White. And by the way, Nick White's pay comes from your donations. And it's Maximum Fun drive time. So visit MaximumFun.org to make your donation now. The drive runs May 1st through May 15th. Strike while the iron is hot. Soak our challenge donors, all of whom have made a specific pledge for each new donor. Get some cool thank you gifts. Have a good time. I hope we'll see you on the website. Anyway, if you've got thoughts about the show, you can email me at jesse@MaximumFun.org. And, of course, we're online at MaximumFun.org, where our blog and our forums and, of course, our donation page are found. We'll see you next time right here on The Sound of Young America.